All right, so tonight we're going to continue with our class on Zen chants and texts. So this is, we're using Living by Vow as our guide, and we're working our way through a bunch of chants and texts that we regularly use in our practice. I wanted to start off with a verse that is not in Shohaku Okumura's book, but that we do all the time. So that is, and everybody should have a chant book, and or if you're at home, there's a link has been placed in the chat for the chant book. And the first chant we'll do is the universal dedication. So you'll recognize this, even if you don't come to our chanting services, because we do it like at the end of class, and we do it at the end of all kinds of stuff. And usually we, you know, put a link in the chat. It's like, here's the chant. But a lot of times, like, we don't put a link to this. So basically at the end of classes and talks and whatever, everybody goes like this and mumbles some stuff. And like you might have just been like, I don't know what. So this is what that is. So sometimes we just recite it, but this time we can, you know, chant it. And I guess I'll just start on chanting it if you want to join me. All Buddha Sura Sei Santa, all Father Bodhisattva Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Mahaprajna Paramita. Okay. So first, I want to share with you what that chant is in Japanese and Sino-Japanese. And then hopefully, we'll see how the whole technology works, play you a little clip of Zen monks at Sojiji Temple chanting it. It's a little bit unclear, but once I'll chant it for you in Sino Japanese, and then you might be able to recognize it. So it's Ji Ho San Ji I Ji Fu Ji Sun Bu Sa Mo Ko Sa Mo Ko Ho Ja Ho. I will, let's see, I have to share my screen, which the host needs to give permission for that. I think under participants or share, you can just say, let everybody share. Let multiple people share at once and it'll all be good. Or you can make me a co-host.
Sorry, I thought you were a host already.
But we usually are.
Okay. You should be able to share now. You're a co-host. Sorry about that.
There we go. Okay. And I think I have to share and choose optimize for video sharing and share sound. All right. So this is This is something that you chant after. I thought, in a way, you thought of this as the dedication, the All Buddhas, but the dedication comes before that. That's, we'll say something like, we dedicate the merit of this class to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. Or in our services, if we do the, chanting service, we chant the names of the ancestors, and then we say, we pray that we may be able to show our gratitude. We say a bunch of stuff, and then we go all Buddhas throughout space and time and do this thing. And if you'll just a side note, in our services, our chanting services that we do on Sunday mornings and every morning during retreat, there's two times we do a dedication followed by this All Buddhas. And that signifies that our morning services are actually two services put together. Just a little side tidbit. So when I play this, you'll hear them, they're singing a dedication in Japanese. So I don't know what they're saying, but then at the end of it, everybody does the Jiho Son Chi. So let's see. So at some point, I want to share more of that recording with people because they do the Maka Hanya Haramita Shingyo. I also want to find where they're like chanting the names of ancestors and stuff. It's fun to see. So
it looked huge. Have you been to Sojiji?
Yes. The
It's about
Sojiji,
big.
like, yeah, it's a gigantic chanting hall. Like you could fit 1,000 people in there.
Oh my God.
Because in Japan, probably generally speaking, but definitely when it comes to Buddhist stuff, like a sign that it's just really cool is it's really big. It's just like everything just, you just make it really big. So I looked up on the Sotoshu website. This is the Soto Zen school in Japan. They have a sweet little website that they've put in English and try to explain stuff for us. And a dedication of merit or an ekko, say to transfer or give away merit, meaning the karmic fruits or beneficial results of one's own good deeds to another person or being. In Mahayana texts especially, one finds the idea that a bodhisattva should, from the very start, dedicate all the merit that results from his or her cultivation of morality, concentration, and wisdom to all living beings. So it's a very common thing for one to dedicate the merit, and that kind of contrasts with like there's other ways of practicing where especially even in early Buddhism, lay people. You make donations, you say prayers, you do various things, and you earn merit, which will buy you like a better rebirth. Like, so in the next life, you're increasing your chances of a decent situation in your next life. But when we get to the Bodhisattva ideal, we want to, you know, dedicate the merit of all of that to others. So then there's this all Buddhas throughout space and time, which as I'm looking at, I was like, that's not the dedication. So what is it? Are we like asking all Buddhas to, or are we dedicating merit to the all Buddhas as well as to whoever we just chanted, you know, dedicated it to? And I have a friend who's a Zen Soto Zen priest, and just one of the most scholarly people that I know. He doesn't have an actual degree in Buddhist studies, but I'm sure that he could just get an honorary one, right? So I knew, like, if anybody would know, like, what this was. And it's in, you know, the Soto school has this book of, you know, texts and scriptures for us. And it's in there, but it doesn't call it anything. It's just tagged on things. And so I wrote to Kokyo today, and he said, so the universal dedication, so the chant book is wrong, because I call this the universal dedication, is may this merit equally extend to every being and place so that all may realize Buddha's way, right? So that's a version of what we say. We dedicate the merit of whatever we're doing to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. And then you got this all Buddha's thing. He says, it is a strange thing for the group to recite after the dedication of merit. It's done in Chinese Chan as well, probably very ancient. I think of it as a kind of sealing of the dedication by calling on the three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, to witness, verify, or aid the dedication, but don't really know. I vaguely recall Myo Lehi, with his Catholic background, calling these lines a benediction, a short invocation for divine help, blessing, and guidance, usually at the end of a worship service. So, kind of embarrassed to say, I don't even know what this is. But I can say, you know, what is referring to all Buddhas throughout space and time. So in particular, you know, we have a, and again, this is not necessarily, this isn't a literal belief, but more of a mythological belief, one that may not be literally true, but has truth in it. So not maybe, I would say it's not merely metaphor, that there's been many Buddhas throughout time, many awakened beings. And by definition, kind of a Buddha is, you know, a completely awakened being and a self-awakened being. So all of us have a Buddha to follow, but Shakyamuni Buddha kind of discovered this path by himself. And that there's been Buddhas, such Buddhas in the past, and there will be such Buddhas in the future. So all Buddhas throughout and space. So then we get to Mahayana too, where there's like, it kind of gets into this fractal quantum physics kind of scenario where it's like there's a whole universe and every atom and you know, every atom has a Buddha in it. And then, you know, within that, every Buddha has pores, and inside every pore is a world, and that has a Buddha too. So it's like, gets very, very cosmic. So all Buddhas, all awakened ones everywhere. All honored ones, bodhisattvas, of course, enlightening beings, beings seeking to be awakened, but then also stick around and help other people, which is what we aspire to as well. And then mahasattvas, bodhisattvas is enlightening beings, and maha is just great. So they're just great beings. So I guess that's, you know, all the other great beings who aren't necessarily bodhisattvas in the sense that we mean, but they're still great and beneficial beings. And then wisdom beyond wisdom, maha is great again. And then prajna paramita, prajna is wisdom, and paramita is perfection. So wisdom beyond wisdom, meaning, you know, even greater than common wisdom, is this perfection of wisdom, which essentially is insight into the emptiness of all self and all phenomena. That is the critical insight in Mahayana Buddhism. So we are calling to all the Buddhas, all the Bodhisattvas and great beings, and to great wisdom itself, which also has a mythological manifestation as there's actually kind of a figure, a woman, a female figure that can be called Prajnaparamita and is called the mother of all Buddhas. So it's pretty cool. So
is it,
yeah.
I mean, the minute you started talking about this, I'm trying to put it together in my head. I mean, it feels like we offer the merit of this class discussion to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. I want to say in honor of all Buddhists throughout space and time, all honored quantum. Or is it simply, once again, as we do every Sunday when we go through all the names, we are recalling our ancestors once again?
I don't know.
It's fun to think about.
Yeah. I mean, I told Kokyo that I said, I'm just going to tell them that I don't know. You don't know either. And I think they'll get a kick out of that. Mm-hmm. And we're all doing it, right? Like, oh, but, you know. I mean, it just, obviously it kind of works, right? It is, I mean, for me, I guess it is like, it's maybe recalling the reason that we're doing all of this, and or it's a source of inspiration. Yes.
So I have a couple thoughts. First of all, you know, obviously it's part of the meal invocation too, in a little bit expanded form, this chant. But somewhere I got the idea, and I read it somewhere, that this chant is appropriate to chant after a Zazen period. So if you're sitting by yourself, that this is an appropriate thing to do. And I read that years ago, and that's what I do when I'm sitting alone, is I chant this when I'm done with the sutta. As a way of any kind of, like, just giving away anything that you've individually cultivated during that period, just saying, I'm just going to give this away. So an expression of gratitude and generosity. And I feel like I read that. I don't know if it was in one of Okamura's books or if it was just on the Sanshin website, or but I associated with something that Okamura said.
Yeah, I mean, and it does remind me that,
thank you.
You know, according to our shared mythology, you gain the most merit by giving to, like, very virtuous beings, right? So, I mean, not that we would really be like, well, let's see, I could give this to that, you know, suffering being over there, but if I give it to the Buddha instead. So I don't really know the reasoning behind it, but I guess it's like, if you give the merit, for instance, to monks, to virtuous beings, then, like, maybe the sense is that they're going to do more good with it, you know, have more of a lasting impact. I don't know.
Well, I do want to just add that I love what Dan said about generosity. That very much appeals to me.
Mm-hmm.
It is an act of generosity. And secondly, it's a reminder of the first Bodhisattva vow. I'm giving this to everybody so that they may be able to obtain the truth.
Well, sweet. Let us move on to the road verse. And I was looking on YouTube for some Zen monks doing the road verse, but I couldn't find it. But I'll do some more research. So, as many of you will have noticed, or maybe you already participate in this. So we have various garments that we wear. I wear when I'm in, you know, doing zazen or service, I have this big extra robe I'm wearing on top of this robe, which is just a smaller version of, you would have seen like Southeast Asian monks and nuns who, like, they're completely swaddled in orange cloth, and that's the robe. Once Buddhism got to China, it was colder, so they wore, you know, these kinds of robes, and then put a smaller version of that kesa on top. And then this kind of bib thing is a relatively recent modern invention of, it's just, you know, it's more on the go, right? It's like, it's the smaller version, more convenient, more informal settings. But for a priest. But then this is also what a lay, a formal lay student will wear, which, so Shoketsu has hers on right here. So those in our sangha who take the step of Saike Tokudo will be wearing one of those. And then there's many people in the sangha wearing a strip of cloth with a decorative knot at the bottom, and those sagesas that we give when people receive the precepts and formally become Buddhists. So anytime it's a robe, it's a sign of vows. It's a sign of vows that we have taken. And when we each day, we're supposed to renew those vows. So ideally we sit every day, right? Maybe we do it or don't. But if you sit every day, and if you were sitting in a monastery and you had to set multiple periods of meditation, you always sit the first period without your this kind of robe on. And then it's like you've had time to consider your vows again. Then there's the clappers, if you... So then the clappers will go, and somebody will announce that the rope burst should be happening, and then we will sing that, which is on page 2, and we can just do the English version, although I'll note that I have us do the Sino-Japanese version one time and then do the English version twice. And, you know, it's not that I have some great, I am a Japanophile, but that's not why I have it in there. But rather, if I can find a recording of like Japanese monks doing their rope verse, then you will recognize it, right? So it kind of keeps us connected, which is also why I have us chant the Heart Sutra in Sino-Japanese, the Hanya Haramita Shingyo, right? So that, because in English, there's many, many different translations into English. So wherever you go, it's going to be slightly different. But everybody, like, because the Japanese standardized it, everybody will chant the Hanya Haramita Shingyo the same way. So I guess when we study the Heart Sutra next, then we can listen to that record. So, let's chant the English robe verse one time.
Spirit of
We free all living beings. I choose for us to have a very steady kind of boring tempo when we chant that, in order to, I guess it is my choice, fancy, in order to accommodate anyone who joins us from other lineages. Because as you, if you go elsewhere, you'll find most places have some kind of quirky rhythm to it. You know, they'll be like, how great the robe of liberation. Like, they'll just, I don't know. So you never know, right? Whereas, I mean, if we just keep it kind of steady, you can, people can join in more easily. I'm not saying the other ways are wrong, but just, you know. So the robe of liberation, that's, you know, that kind of literally, but then we say a formless field of benefaction. So kind of, we're also saying, you know, we're wrapping ourselves in Buddha's teaching. So we're talking kind of literally about our robe, but we're speaking more about what the robe signifies, right? Our vows, the practice, we are wearing it, we are choosing it, we are being seen with it, we are taking refuge in it. So, and then by so doing, we hope to fulfill our bodhisattva vows to free all beings.
Okay. Yeah, I like to also, sure, I have to also think of every time I'm taking the Dharma, anytime you're giving a talk, I try to wear it. So you're listing all the
things. Yeah, yes. Yeah, so then we tend to wear these informal Dharma settings. That's not required, but yeah. So let's see. So Shohaku Okamura mentioned how Dogen went to China to study, and he had, you know, he was already ordained as a monk. So he was familiar with monks' robes. And he said he had heard or read about like saying this verse, but he had never seen it done until he got to this monastery where he was studying with his teacher. And it, when the monks all put the robes on their heads. So I found that in the, this is in the Shobogenzo, and it's a essay called Kesa Kudoku, The Merit of the Kasaya. Or Kesa, and it's at the very end. So he saw the monks, you know, as after sitting a period of meditation, and they take out their robe. I don't really know why you put it on your head. It's just a sign of respect. It's probably something Indian or Chinese. That, like, maybe there's probably other instances where you touch something to your head as a sign of respect. But we put it on our heads, leave it there, and then chant. So Dogen says, at the time, realizing this was something I had never seen before, I was overcome with joy, and tears of gratitude secretly fell, moistening the lapels of my robe. The point was that when previously I had perused the Agama Sutras, although I had seen the passage on placing the kasaya on the head, the rite was still not clear to me. Seeing it now right before my eyes, I rejoiced and was delighted, and thought to myself, what a pity that when I was in my native land, I had no master to teach me this, no wise friend to recommend it. How could I not regret, not lament so many years and months spent in vain? Now, having seen and heard it, I should be happy for the good karma of former lives. And he brought the practice back to Japan. So I have a couple minutes if anyone has wants to say something about experience with robes or the robe verse.
Well, I do have two very quick questions. Once and for all, after we do the robe verse and we put it around our necks, when the last part of the last verse is done, do we bow?
I don't know.
I don't either.
I mean, you can. Well, I don't. I'm not aware of an extra bow there.
When we do the All Buddhas Throughout Space and Time.
Yeah.
Maharaja Paramita, do we bow?
I'm not aware of a bow there either.
We do.
Jade.
A lot of us do.
Good question to the chat.
So questions in the chat. Scroll down here. The written Japanese version of the chant. Yes, if you go to the Soto, I think it's sotozen.net, the Soto Shu website, they have a PDF of this book. It's of the Soto School Scriptures for Daily Services and Practice. It's really cool. I'm not sure if you can order it or not, but it's done Japanese style, right? Like the accordion style book. And on one side is like English, and on the other side is the Sino-Japanese transliteration. It doesn't have the characters, but yeah. Oh, but you want the Japanese. I mean, probably could get your hands on just like an AHG Sojiji chant book, you know, that and just like the monks have. So, let's see, another question. All right, but John, you're gonna be talking anyway. So go ahead, John.
Real quick on that prior question, if I Google like a Zen chant in Sino-Japanese, it gives me that plus the characters. She can probably find that just by Googling it. So my question was, I'm trying to visualize what is meant by a robe when Dogen's seeing all these Chan monks putting their robe on their head, because we just have something that symbolizes a robe, but what are they wearing if their robes are on their head?
Well, you know, like I have my okesa, right? I have this extra robe I put on top of this robe.
Okay.
So when you open it up, it's actually a big rectangle and it just has these ties on it. And you kind of put it under one arm and tie it over your shoulder like that, put it under that arm. And that's the okesa. This is just like a Chinese court robe.
Okay.
That you wear underneath it. So the okesa, so then there's a special way you fold it. Some of you may have seen me like put it over my head so that I can fold it up correctly. And so that whole thing goes on your head.
Cool. I guess I haven't been very observant. It'd be interesting to see that whole hall with all the monks in it that you showed on the video earlier, all of them standing up.
I would look at them like waiting to help, but oh, they already had their robes on. And just a little side thing. So when you say that, we do the robe verse three times, as the third time through begins, those of us with kesas, monks, you know, priests or lay teachers, we'll start putting it on because it takes us a little longer. And if you have a rakusu or wagesa, you wait until it's wrapping ourselves. Leah.
Oh, this is not a question. It is just a statement. I just want to say that I love this. I love this. And the reason I love it is not because it's a thing, but because it changes my mindset. It changes my mind actually when I put it on. And I didn't know that when I first started here. So I was being all aspirational because I thought, oh, other people are wearing cool things. And I want to wear this cool thing because I want to be a good Buddhist too, you know. So, but what I didn't realize is that it's truly moving to put it on. It's like this, what this does to me, as opposed to me getting this, if that makes sense. I just love it.
Thank you. I mean, that's where there's just a lot of surprising wisdom in our forms and teachings, which is why I am all about like a full traditional path of practice as opposed to a kind of new age hodgepodge of only what you think sounds good or is interesting or attractive or whatever. I mean, there's pros and cons. You know, maybe there's stuff that we've kept around that we don't really need to keep around and, you know, is alienating to most people. I don't, you know, so it's not necessarily that every single thing in our whole tradition is just amazing and wonderful and you have to love it, but if there's a lot of stuff that we end up trying just because there it is. And then we're like, wow. You know, that's why, like, I'm not a devotional kind of person, but when I do our ceremonies and I like pour a little bit of water over the baby Buddha's head on Buddha's birthday, and I'm just like, ah, I love that. I mean, it does something to us. Jim, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, now you muted.
Yes.
Hey.
Yeah. There we go. I was going to say, I don't know where I picked it up, but I somehow, somewhere picked up there was like a bow at the end of each chant, just a standing bow, not a full bow. I assume you meant a standing, you meant a just a standing bow, Jinryu?
Barely. I mean, it's
Yeah.
just not really.
Yeah.
At the end of what chants?
The road
I think it
chant.
was like any chant.
I was specifically asking about the rope chant and the
Yeah, I knew that.
what is the other one? The universal,
Well,
whatever.
Kyogen, one of my teachers once observed that one of the phenomena is for bows to simply multiply. Because it's kind of like, well, why not? I think maybe I should bow, so I'll bow. And then everybody's, oh, she's bowing, so then everybody bows. I guess it doesn't hurt, but I don't know. There was one point at which he kind of went through and was just like, okay, no bowing here and here and here. All right, well, let's move on to the meal verse. I have to say that was a really long chapter. And Shohaku Okamura, and he's going off on like emptiness and like it's like, wow, this is a lot about the meal chant. But I have another little video for you. I will, it doesn't sound all that great, but I thought if you have not seen an Oreoke meal, then you might not appreciate what this meal chant is about. So this is a video of some people doing an Oreoke meal. And Oryoki is a word that means just enough. So it's the name of this formal eating ritual that we do when we are in retreat. And it's a way we have a set of three nesting bowls, and they get wrapped up in a cloth, and there's a certain way that you unwrap them and open them, and then you serve yourself some food, and at the end they're all empty. You clean them up, you nest them back, and wrap them back up. So actually, in some ways, it's all about the ritual and mindfulness of it, but it's also a lot about hygiene and efficiency, right? You don't have to run all these dishes through the dishwasher. I'm going to eat out of my own bowls the whole time. I wash them out as at the end. So anyway, we'll just do another share here. So share. There's the karaoke bowl. I'll jump a little bit too. Now they're going to begin. Their translation's a little different than ours. Oh, if you wanna the meal verses
74
are on page 74 of the chat book, in case you want to follow along. Like I said, their translation is a little bit different, but pretty similar.
Was born in Kapilavastu. It lights in
You can see the one guy's telling the chant leader to go faster.
Now we set out with all living beings, realize the emptiness of self-clinging. I love you.
Then they unwrap their bowls, spread out the utensil. Take a little while.
In the midst of the three treasures which verify our understanding, entrusting ourselves to the Sangha, we recall homage to the boundless Dharmakaya Parachana Buddha, the complete Sambhogakaya Lojana Buddha, Sattvare Kampasha.
And they chanted all those Buddha's names. Then they bring the food. So then we serve all the food. And then, let's see. This is why we don't, when we do a retreat, and the cloud is joining us, we don't bother to have the cloud join us for meals, because if you were at home, have your own food, you'd just be sitting there while your food got cold, while all happened. So
Emil, may I ask,
yeah.
where is Merkley?
I don't know. I don't know actually.
Okay.
This is This is Tree Leaf Zendo. They've been doing online stuff since long, like ages, long before COVID.
Okay.
So they do this kind of really make things accessible. But I don't think this is the Sangha in Japan. I don't
know.
So we turn towards the altar of canon.
Practice harmless and beneficial.
Okay.
To obtain the way you will receive this food.
For all creatures who hunger and to nourish this world, now we present you this offering.
Do the ripple raising and then eat. So you can see in our chant book, you know, it talks about the different stages of the chant. Yeah, I don't really have time to go through and decode all of the bodhisattvas and Buddhas and all of that. So how about I just let people ask questions? Or make comments about your experience of the formal meal verses and Morioki and stuff. Judith.
Can I ask from your mind?
Go ahead.
What will happen to me if I don't do any chanting? I always hide.
We do. What will happen if she never does any chanting? What will happen to her? Nothing.
You don't know that for sure, though.
That's true. That is true. I don't know. Like, I guess I mean, you just might miss out on something. Which isn't obligatory, but it's like, I don't know. I guess there's plenty of things that I don't jump forward to do, you know, like try to jam and improvise with other musicians when I have no idea how that works, right? But like, maybe I should just jump in, because what are we afraid of?
Definitely should.
But, you know, I really, you know, at one point, for instance, this isn't directly related, but like, and we're chanting all these men's names during our ancestral line. Mm-hmm. And there's part of me that's just like, you know, half of these guys wouldn't have given me the time of day as a student. So it's kind of like, so I felt like I was just like, you know, I was buckling to the patriarchy by chanting these names. And then, but then I realized, like, every time I chanted them, I mean, I had to chant them every day, right? Every time I chanted them, I'm going like this. And like, is that, what's that doing against the patriarchy? All it is making me miserable, right? Like, so I just figured, like, okay, fine, I'll just chant it. I said,
Oh, sorry.
It's interesting that this is the topic tonight, because I just set the session at Great Vow, and the chants are different there. And as I sat through it, it became beautiful, and I really enjoyed it, but I still appreciate the way we do things more. Mm-hmm. And I really liked how you said how you've taken time to try to make it accessible and easier for people to participate in.
Yeah.
And that was the, I kind of found myself thinking, I wish I would have found maybe Dharma Rain or something when I actually went and sat with Great Bell, like almost 17 years ago. Cause I don't know, the chanting has been a little bit of a stretch for me to get into, but like, it's been a little easier here. I still struggle with it, especially the Japanese. But yeah, thank you so much.
Well, and just so you know, like our chanting is as dissimilar from Dharma Rains now as it is from Great Vows. And I really like to do things like as kind of traditionally and conservatively as I can, considering that like I never even trained in Japan and, you know, whatever. So the ship sailed really, but I try. And I went down to ask Edjo McMullen, who's a Japanese trained priest who has a temple in Eugene. And I was getting his advice about like, you know, what kind of chants should we put into the morning service and all that. And basically he was kind of like, you know, you get to decide. That's the tradition, right? Like in Japan, similarly, you go to different temples and the chanting will be different. Different tempos, different melodies, choose different chants to put together. There's, you know, kind of a typical menu of scriptures and stuff like that. But
I really appreciate kind of, it.
Yeah, I was like, well, that's cool.
I don't have a question, but I love the meal verse. The meal chant, I love all chanting so much. I love it so much, but I love the meal chant the most. And I just like contemplating the giver, receiver, and gift before you receive a meal in any setting is just really, really nice. And Shohaku Okumura in this chapter just goes, I just feel like it's just like the cyclical on and on and on. He's talking about emptiness and like oneness with everything. But like, it's really being a session is kind of like an acid trip. You're just like, whoa. And you feel, and but like when you, and this is like a plug for doing Orioki and sitting and even Zazenkai is that it's just like right in your face. And I have these ceramic bowls that my friend, she does ceramics and she made me these bowls. And I'm like, these bowls are earth and this food is earth. And now I'm earth. And it's really fun to contemplate that, especially when you're like deep in session. So that's my plug. Sign up for Zazenkai so we can all eat together.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I mean, honestly, when you said how much you love doing it, I thought what I thought about was being at session at Oral Hall and just, I mean, there's just something about, you know, sharing a meal and, you know, some Sangha members have worked hard to make it happen. And I don't know, it's just really powerful experience. Shinran.
Yes, hi. I just had a quick question. On page 96, Shohaku says, when we receive or eat a meal, we shouldn't grasp the taste. So maybe I'm reading too much into it. Like we, you know, shouldn't enjoy a tasty meal or.
I mean, that's a tricky one because. I mean, some Zen communities, and I'm sure, you know, Buddhist communities and probably any kind of spiritual community can get a little tight-assed, right? And then they make their food kind of tasteless, coarse, and just kind of like it's just nutrition, right? It's just, but we, you know, Dogen is our great Soto Zen ancestor, right? And he has the essay Instructions to the Cook, and it says very specifically, you know, the cook takes care, and the food should have the six tastes, and the, you know, the three virtues. And, you know, so you get this sense like it's supposed to be good. And then he tells the story of meeting the monk in China, or an elderly monk who has traveled like all day to get special mushrooms for the monastery meal. And then he has to walk all the way back to the monastery. So, I mean, he's going, that to me is saying like, you know, there. And I love that as a Tenzo is like making good food for people, right? My teacher said no one should ever want to leave a retreat because of the food. And the food is like, the food is the only thing you have. It's almost the only thing, you know, you're in pain, you sit a lot, you're not at home, you don't have your pets, you don't have your loved ones, you don't have your coping mechanisms, you don't have entertainment, nothing. Like, you know, just like, what are we going to have for lunch? So, ideally it's good. But, you know, like, in a way, if the food isn't good, right? Then what do we do? If we're all upset and disappointed, or if we're all excited and lose our mindfulness because it's so delicious, or as I have done many times, something is really good and I take way too much of it. I mean, it's just like my greed is just like, I just get the suffer the consequences of my greed right in front of me, right? I'm like, oh no, a little bit more. And then I'm sitting there trying to finish this food, right? Because you've got to finish it. Everybody has to finish at the same time. And I've just been like, you know, just sucking this food down that I got so greedy about. So, you know, I think it's actually an opportunity for us to just see our preferences and attachments. Because I have lots of ideas about how food should be prepared at retreats, right? And I can just make myself totally miserable with that. Well, I guess that brings us to the end. We dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita. Well, there we go. We bow. Yeah. But I'm kind of like, that's because we're bowing to each other.
It just feels right.
It feels right. That feels right. You're right.
It feels like anytime you put your hands in that show, you have to.
Yeah.
I'll have to also be paying attention to that.
Yeah, what else would
you do? Thanks, Domiel. It's great.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.